Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this rainy Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Corey Curtis, our man from News 2, join us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into all things NFL playoffs and the Tennessee Titans with him, so looking forward to that. Darren McFarland, host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, joins us at 9 o'clock. We'll get into the latest with the Nashville Predators with him. A tough weekend for the Predators against the Stars, so a lot still coming up here on the show. And Joe, speaking of disappointments, rough week last week for the Tennessee Vols on the court. They had a tough loss against Florida. They got drilled 75-49 in that game by the Gators, I think on Tuesday night. And then Saturday night, Missouri, who they just dominated a few weeks ago, they come into Knoxville and walk out with a 73-64 win against Tennessee. Joe, what in the world's going on with Vols basketball right now? They're supposed to be like the one hope for this athletic department at the moment.
Well, the good news for Tennessee basketball fans is Kelly Harper's team is playing very well.
Yeah, they are.
Big blowout of Kentucky yesterday. Almost beat UConn. Blew out Alabama last week. They're figuring it out. Meanwhile, the men's team is, they're struggling. They're missing Jaden Springer. He has not played the last two games, and they lost them both. And they miss him. Santiago Viscovi has a hip thing, and with basketball players and hip things,
it's not a good
troubling because it's like the core thing, and it can be and it's affecting him. But that does not explain away some of the soft play they've had lately. And I mean, John Fulkerson has got to pick it up. I'm disappointed in how he's playing lately, and Rick Barnes is calling him out. And I thought maybe he'd respond better against Missouri after being called out. I also thought Rick Barnes was going to change up the starting lineup. He didn't. But regardless, he's got to lean on Fulkerson, and Fulkerson is not playing. I mean, think about last year when he went to Kentucky and they couldn't deal with him.
Yeah.
He just dominated that team. He's been – I don't know. He's got to pick it up. Eve Pons hasn't played as well either. They got to get – and I thought – EJ Anasicki was going to be more of a factor inside because they need more bulk to help Fulkerson out, and he just hasn't done as much. That guy misses too many layups for one thing, but they just look like a team that lacks confidence. I still think they're a great defensive team when they have everything going. Springer's a big part of that, but Viscovi being healthy is a part of that too, and if you're giving up dribble penetration, it all falls apart. But offensively, they're kind of a mess right now.
And it's not like that's been new. Often they've struggled to really get things consistently figured out offensively all season long at this point. So as you look at this team, two losses in a row, one of them really ugly against Florida, where they were never in that game this past week. Played a little bit better against Missouri, but you're at home. You just dominated that team a couple of weeks ago. How concerned should Tennessee fans be at this point about this group? Is this just one of those things that happens, a lull you go through in January, and you get through it, you get it figured out by March, and you never talk about it again? Or are there real points of concern about this Tennessee team when you watch them?
Well, I think it's both. First of all, you'd rather have this happen now than on February 25th. You go through this stuff now and build up to March. A lot of their offense, when they play well, is off their defense. Like when they killed Missouri the first time, how many runouts did they get because they blocked a shot or long? They did a great job on the boards, pushed the ball. In the half court, there are concerns. You got to be able to go inside out. I mean, that team 2 years ago, whenever they needed a bucket, go to Grant Williams. They don't have that. I thought Fulkerson was going to be, a minimized version of that. It hasn't been that. So they got to figure that out. They got to be able to go inside some. But I think Keon Johnson, Jaden Springer, they can get to the hole. And you can't go in the post, and you got to drive the basketball. And right now it's a lot of passing around the perimeter and jacking up threes. That's not going to get it done. So they got to be more aggressive, and I think they've just got to let their most talented players do more. So when Springer comes back, Keon Johnson, go attack. And then, but Fulkerson, they're not going to go far in March if Fulkerson isn't playing way better than this.
Yeah, and that's going to be necessary, and they've got a chance to rebound tomorrow. They'll take on Mississippi State, another SEC game tomorrow. So we'll see if Tennessee has what it takes on the floor to rebound and have a more impressive performance offensively. And speaking of Tennessee, Danny White now in place as the athletics director. He's got a coaching search to conduct now on the football side of things. Joe, after we get off the air on Friday, Danny White held his press conference. What were your takeaways? What did you think about Danny White and how he handled his introductory press conference? We hear the term, quote-unquote, winning the press conference all the time. I think especially with Tennessee, sometimes that's way overblown because everybody thought that Jeremy Pruitt, quote-unquote, won the press conference. So I don't put a whole lot of stock into that.
He did.
But what did you think of Danny White and the early impressions from the press conference on Friday?
Yeah, you got to be a major loser not to win your press conference. Yes. It's all set up for you.
It is.
You know, it's like here, it's like bowling, but you got the like the little side
the bumpers
panels
on.
Yeah. I mean, like here you go. Don't screw it up. He was good though. He was funny. He was a little bit self-deprecating. It was obvious he was tired. He was like, man, I've had 3 hours of sleep. I mean, you think about the search for him. I mean, you know, Dante Plowman, I'll still like that press conference from a week ago today, which seems like a month ago, is still like some of the stuff said there, like about Fulmer
still
and everything,
brutal.
It's just incredible. But I give her credit. She went out and said, you know what? Three people are going to figure this out. Everybody else shut up. Go fly in, talk to this guy. This guy's awesome. Look at what he's done. Hire him. I give her credit for moving fast and getting a good hire. I thought Danny White's presser was good, and he did not offer much. He was asked, in fact, Blake Topmeyer, friend of the show, asked him about the head coaching experience thing, and he didn't answer it.
Yeah.
He went on and some other thing. I also love how he trolled Alabama.
Yeah.
With the little – so I tweeted out that quote about – you know, basically, like, there's another, like, you know, there were two champions.
Right.
Everybody knows, you know, UCF was undefeated. They beat Auburn, so they claimed the national. How are Alabama fans this fragile?
Fragile.
Oh, they're really mad. Like, count your national championships and just shut up.
You
and
just want another one. It's okay.
Crying about it. Oh, yeah, whatever, Danny White. Like, who cares? But that should be fun moving forward. Now, I don't know, you know, like, when's the next time Tennessee beats Alabama on the football field? I have no idea. But Alabama fans have themselves a little villain now in Knoxville.
Yeah, I mean, look, they started claiming national championships for no reason back in the day, too, when you're losing two games in a year and winning it, too.
So. Wow. Oh, like, all, I mean, all these programs, like, in their media guide, it's like 11 national championships. Then it's like, wait, in 1903, you guys went 6-2, and like it's like one, like they had all these selectors. If you,
oh,
like,
we're about to make people really mad.
It's like Boand and all these weird groups that selected nationally. Yeah. No, well, hey, Alabama has a lot of actual legit ones.
They do.
So just count them and be happy with that. But Danny White, so far, you know, I count on Vol Twitter heavily in times like these, and tracking planes and all this stuff. And they're like blocking the tracker on the planes, and there's all these names flying around.
Yesterday there was this stakeout where the UT plane was getting gassed up, and like there were people just like hiding in the bushes taking pictures of it, ready for their, I think it was like, it ended up maybe being like Danny White's family going back home or something like that.
Going to get the dog, bring the dog home. Yeah.
It just, but it, Vol Twitter, this is what Vol Twitter is made for, is this week right here that we're about to enter into with this coaching search. I am so excited for the rumors that I'll have my eyes on Calhoun's in Knoxville, even though we're in a global pandemic. Like if Peyton Manning is in the booth somewhere in there discussing the coaching hire with Danny White. This week is what Vol Twitter is made for.
I mean, listen, you know, things didn't go great for the Raiders this year. Are we sure? Are we sure that John Gruden isn't interested? The Lane Kiffin stuff, people are going nuts about that. He's the new Gruden. He's the white whale. But when Danny White, I think it was when he picked Scott Frost, I think that's right. There was a story going back then, and it was basically like, This candidate, I heard this, talking to this, all this stuff. And I think it was Scott Frost. Maybe it was when Heupel got the job. But regardless, his hire was not mentioned at all in anything.
Yeah.
So how much of this is like misdirection? Is Tony Elliott misdirection? I don't know. But Danny White has been good so far at not doing like what John Curry did, which was, okay, John Curry's talking to this coach today. Okay, John Curry got turned down by this coach today.
Yeah.
Oh, now tomorrow he's going to talk to this coach. Oh, John Curry got turned down by that coach. You know, I mean, that was just – I mean, before we even got to Shiano Sunday, it was already like, what is going on here?
That's bad.
So Danny White, we'll see. We'll see if he can pull it off, and we'll see how fast he can pull off an actual hire.
I found it very interesting in his press conference, and he brought this up probably four or five times. And some of it I think is just, you know, quote-unquote coach speak or whatever you want to call it. But he brought up so many times, like, all right, like if you're feeling negative, like don't tweet. Just text your buddy about it, or we need a positive environment. And I do wonder, like, from an outside, and we've talked so much about the fan base and social media and everything going on with that, how much that's from his view from the outside looking in, and how much that was talked about maybe in the interview process of the environment around this program right now. Because I found it interesting that he made that point probably at least five times in his press conference to, hey, we need a lot of positive energy. We can't have some negative stuff on social media.
Hey, Danny, good luck, buddy.
Yeah, that'll work.
Good luck to you, my friend. I wish you the best.
By the way, the Tennessee basketball Twitter account Saturday after they lose the game with just the perfect tweet after they lose. They show the graphic of the final score, 73-64 Missouri, and they come out with the, this should be one of those times that you text your friend, not talking on social media. Great stuff by Tennessee basketball Twitter.
Yep, that was good. That was funny. And, hey, maybe Vol Twitter will heed the warnings, and all of a sudden it'll just be, it's okay, guys. It's okay that you lost to Georgia.
Sunshine pumping
going
on.
Hey, you know what? You lost to Georgia State, but by golly, I like the effort today, kids. Go get them. Yeah. I don't know if that's like Danny White. That's a good observation by you. I don't know if that's Danny White looking at Tennessee and saying, God, this place just is a mess. Or if he's just that guy who's like, come on, everybody.
Let's rally together.
Yeah. I don't know, but either way, it's not going to work out. Just win, man. Just win football games.
Got to get the right hire, and that'll take care of itself.
Raise money, win football games, and block everybody on Twitter.
So speaking of the right hire, could Danny White potentially go outside of the box, maybe a little bit off the board as to what we're thinking for the next head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in tomorrow morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The Preds hosting the Chicago Blackhawks at home tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena, and we'll have your opportunity for Preds Pick to Click at 8:45. So make sure you're tuned in for that. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning discussing the coaching search in Knoxville. Danny White is in place. Tennessee has their athletics director, and now the coaching search is underway. And Joe, we've talked about some of the names that are going to be on the list that Tennessee fans have thrown out there, that people in the media have thrown out there. Lane Kiffin has been talked about all weekend long. Matt Campbell from Iowa State, Gus Malzahn being talked about as well. I mean, there are a whole bunch of different candidates on the table. Jamie Chadwell as well. But David Ubben, friend of the show from The Athletic, came out with a piece over the weekend just kind of highlighting Danny White, his press conference that he went through, and the history of the hires that he's made. And the number one point made by Ubben in his article was to keep an eye on some unexpected candidates. Quote, and he pulls a quote from Danny White in the press conference that says, the last few coaching searches I've done at UCF, there was a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, everybody's debating on who it should be, and the people we hired weren't even on that list. I'm not paying attention to that list. If I am, then I don't know why you even hire me. You might as well just go look at the list and start calling them up and see who wants to do it. Now, there are Tennessee fans that take that one of two ways. You got your faction of the fan base that says, all right, well, that means all these people we've talked about with Lane Kiffin and Gus Malzahn and Jamie Chadwell, everybody on this list, he's not going to go that route. He's going to hire somebody off the board. And you've got the other faction that says he's just saying stuff like that at the press conference. He's obviously got a list of his own, but it's not going to just react to the fans and what they want to do. When you look at his history of hiring and you hear that comment from Danny White, what do you think it means? How open do you think he's going to be to looking totally off the board, maybe at names we're not even expecting or talking about right now at Tennessee?
The only problem with this whole thing is that, like, I know at UCF when he had to replace Scott Frost, that was – but before that, like, did anybody – Like, what was there a huge Buffalo fan base? Like, Nate Oates, what are you doing? That's crazy. And I mean, Danny White's been able to be off the board in general, right? I mean, he's been at Buffalo. He's been at UCF. He is now in the quote-unquote big time. So it's probably harder to be off the board, right, at Tennessee than at those places. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if he hires someone completely undiscussed, I guess I'll be surprised because yeah. It's hard to do. There's only so many people who would be qualified for this job. But, you know, to me, like the stunner would be, whoa, James Franklin? Or, you know, could he get a Fickle or a Campbell? There's a lot of talk over the weekend about PJ Fleck, which is an interesting case, and that's another, you know.
Row the boat.
Yeah. You know, the whole, he's too much like Butch. Well, I mean, Butch, I'll take a coach who says every dumb slogan there is if he wins.
Sure.
Who cares? But that would be something like that. I mean, I guess, what's the list of absolute obvious candidates? I mean, Tony Elliott's been thrown around there. You know, like you said, Chadwell would be one of them. The guys I mentioned are like those are the could you get a guy right. Like that higher?
I think Gus is on the list in terms of candidates people are talking about.
Yeah. So if Danny White comes totally out of left field with someone, who would that be? Maybe we'll find out today. You know, maybe we'll find out soon. The plane is all over the place, according to the tracking spies. But it's just, it's hard. It's still hard to, like, look at his past and tie it to this situation because no one used to care who he was hiring.
Right.
Now he's got millions of people hanging on every gas up of the plane.
Yeah. I mean, it's a much different situation. And look, if you're at UCF, I mean, let's be honest here. How many proven coaches are you going to get that have had, you know, any amount of success that are taking the UCF job? You're usually getting the up-and-coming guys. And to his credit, it's worked out really well for him. He's made some great hires on that front. And maybe that is the route they go again with Tennessee and you get an up-and-coming guy. I'm not sure how excited the fan base would be about that right from the jump, but maybe it works out. He's made some really good hires at this point. But I do think, like, if you're Danny White and you're a Tennessee fan, you hear those comments – and you think that automatically means that, like, you know, Malzahn and Kiffin and all these different guys, Campbell and Fickle, they're not on the list and they're not going to at least be contacted, I would find that very hard to believe. I would expect at least most of those guys will be contacted about the job. Who knows who's interested, who's not interested. But if you're Danny White, I mean, I think you've got to check in on those guys and their interest level.
Yeah, unless you have one person in mind.
Yeah.
And maybe he does. You know, you may be focused all along on one person. That definitely happens in coaching searches, but even in those searches, usually there's a check-in. There's you talk to multiple people. I mean, you really should. And then how fast is he trying to work here? You know, like is there a deadline? You know, like in his mind, like do they need to get it done this week, today, tomorrow? Another thing here is. Tennessee's administration said on the record last week, must have had success as a head coach.
Yeah.
So is Danny White, does he care about that? The fact that they said that? I don't suspect he does. I mean, if he goes and gets Tony Elliott, then that's just a complete defiance of that statement from a week ago. But it feels like, because they said it, but I believed it when Dante Plowman said it the other day, like they're saying, here you go. We paid you a bunch of money. You are a big hire, and now you go do this.
Well, and the other part of it is, if you're a coach looking at this job, how concerned are you about the NCAA, maybe some possible sanctions coming down the pike for Tennessee? And quite frankly, I wanted to know how concerned Danny White was about that as well. And he talked about it a little bit in his press conference, said, quote, I don't know that I've ever considered that it would be crippling. I don't think a university and an athletic department and a football program with this much history and this much going on for it can be crippled by something. I think it's a matter of how long is it going to take to climb out of it. So he went on this big, you know, conversation, talking point about that. Doesn't sound like Danny White's overly concerned about major sanctions coming down to the point where it cripples the football program. But I think he is open to the fact that maybe you can get for a year or 2 years, there are some challenges that you could have to overcome. And if you're a coach coming in, you're going to have to be okay with that. And if I have a coach coming in, I would say, that's fine. I'll be okay with it. You've got to be patient and let me build the program after that as well. So finding that match is going to be, I think, challenging for Danny White to do as well as a part of this.
The thing about, you know, this self-investigation, it's going to, we've talked about it, it's going to make coaches say, what is happening there? You've really, you know, it looks like to get out of a buyout, you've signed up for some serious stuff. But also, I mean, you would think it would help, right? I mean, it's supposed to help if you actually earnestly investigate yourself and sanction yourself,
right?
Versus, say, LSU, which is, you know, I mean, there's plenty of places that are trying to. I mean, again, Memphis last year is like, yeah, screw you. We're just going to play James Wiseman.
Yeah.
You
know? We don't care.
I mean, you're supposed to like get some kind of a break from being, you know, from participating and cooperating with the NCAA. So maybe that's also part of Danny White not being that worried. I mean, look, bottom line is, this is for Danny White, this is a long-term job, paying a lot of money. So I'm not surprised that NCAA sanctions didn't scare him away from this job.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, Tennessee let Kiffin go because USC was on his list of teams that he was allowed to leave for. Is Tennessee on Kiffin's list to leave Ole Miss? I don't know if there's a list thrown out there.
That's
not how
it works.
Did it. Now, the question is, all right, if you're Ole Miss, or if you're Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, would you leave Tennessee if that opportunity is presented to yourself? But I was thinking about this, like, you know, if you're Tennessee, first off, if that happened and Lane Kiffin ended up there, Tennessee fans would be ecstatic about it, which is, number one, pretty funny to me based on what happened 12 years ago at Tennessee and just everything that happened up until that point. But that's the SEC. That's life in the SEC. And it wouldn't be all that shocking to me. But if that happens, if you're Tennessee and he's done it to you once, he just did it to Ole Miss, wouldn't you be worried about at some point him doing it again and being like, all right, I've had 2 good years here at Tennessee, and now the Notre Dame job's open or whatever job out there is open. Wouldn't you be concerned at that point if you're Tennessee that he does that again? If he leaves Ole Miss after 1 year and ends up back in your program when you've already seen him do it to you once?
No. Have success.
I mean, look, I'm with you.
But, I mean, do you think it's possible? Certainly. Will you sign up for it still? Certainly. I mean, there aren't that many places. Like, what are the places? Realistically, I guess like Bama?
Yeah.
I mean, that was remember like in the fall? Oh, Bama fans, oh, we're going to get Pruitt in here.
He's coming in. He'll be the coach in waiting after Nick Saban.
Now they're like, hey, Jeremy, would you like an analyst gig? We have
life
an opening.
Comes at you fast.
We have an opening in the intern department. There aren't that many jobs that Lane Kiffin would leave for. But yeah, to the texter there. Now there wasn't a list. I mean, that was his list. That was the one place he said he'd go, which makes sense. I mean, I understand leaving USC at that time was.
And I believe him when he says that. Like USC, based on his history there, it makes sense that he leaves for that job. Now, would there be other jobs that he would have left for? I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, Ole Miss. But, yeah, Ole Miss doesn't have some list like these are okay to go to. They just have buyouts. These schools just have buyouts. That's what the buyouts are for. But boy, what a crusher that would be. By the way, there was a big thing on Twitter. Also, someone who covers Alabama, like, why would you think that Tennessee's a better job than Ole Miss? And I'm like, really? It's a better job by Ole Miss in just about every measure.
Yeah. Why would you not think Tennessee is a better job than Ole Miss?
Well, see, people get caught up in the crappy product on the field, which I get, but, like, still, when you're judging jobs, that's why, like, a lot of people would still say, like, Georgia's a better job than Alabama. Now, most people say, wait, what are you talking about? Alabama win? But you can still make the case. Regardless, judging jobs is, like, what you have built in. It's not what you're doing on the field. Alabama was an amazing job for a decade when they sucked before they got Saban still, right? And Tennessee's the same thing now. It's absolutely, unequivocally a better job than Ole Miss, which is why there's even talk about Lane leaving for Knoxville. And, boy, what fun that would be.
And I'm very interested to see how quickly this process goes down this week with Danny White in Tennessee. Is it wrapped up this week? Does this stretch out into next week? How long does this go with the Tennessee coaching search?
There's no way, right? I mean, it's going to be done this week.
You can't
have
a repeat.
They're moving fast.
Yeah, just based on the speed of the AD, I would expect that it will be done this week. If it's not, maybe we're in for another 2017-esque search. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, boy. Bring it all the way back around to Shiano. How
yeah, just bring it all the way back around. That'd go over well. When we come back, we will get into the Nashville Predators. A tough weekend in Dallas and an area of their game that's become very, very concerning in the last couple of outings. We'll discuss it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into all things NFL playoffs and Titans with him, so looking forward to that conversation. And then Darren McFarlane, host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, also handles the pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network. He joins us at 9 o'clock. We'll get into the latest with the Nashville Predators with him. And Joe, over the break, we saw this tweet from Brian Rice, who works with WNML in Knoxville with the Vols, and says, quote, "I can't say for certain that Tennessee has its man, but I can say that two candidates that were closely vetted by Parker were informed last night that they won't be receiving formal interviews. Two others that have been linked to the job by media have not been contacted at all." So we'll continue to monitor that. Don't know if that means that they've got their man or not hired at this point, but that coming from Brian Rice, that maybe some contacts have been made.
I just quote tweeted that and asked the question, is Gruden one of them? That is the main thing I want to know.
Yes, absolutely. John Gruden, Peyton Manning at the Calhouns or on the river.
I mean, Peyton would be an awesome OC for him.
Yeah, it really would
be
great.
Think about that.
Innovative
man.
Offense.
Be pretty awesome.
He's been offensive coordinator in the league for years, calling his own plays.
Exactly. So Omaha.
Omaha. We will continue to keep you updated on that. It was a tough weekend, Joe, for the Nashville Predators. They got hammered on Friday night, 7-0 against Dallas. The game's 0-0 heading into the second period. And then just a blitz by the Stars on the power play. They score 5 power play goals in that game, 1 shorthanded goal en route to a 7-0 win against the Predators. And then last night, more trouble for the Predators on the penalty kill. 3 goals allowed on the power play last night. So you're talking about 8 power play goals given up over the weekend to a team that has not played a game yet up until that point in the Dallas Stars. It was a very rough weekend for the Predators on special teams. Was not good at all.
So give me the correct numbers here. They've given up 9 power play goals in 20.
I believe so.
Right?
Yes.
That's not good.
It's not good.
And you know what's crazy? I went to the NHL.com just to see how far below the rest of the league they were. And actually, the Florida Panthers have given up 60% success. I don't have the exact number there. They've only played 2 games. So
yeah.
Smaller sample size, but what in the world just happened? What happened?
It was weird because Friday night, number one, everything that could go wrong on the penalty kill went wrong, but a lot of it was tips and redirections. Like, rattle off, swats one in out of the middle of the air. Pavelski had one going off his skate. He tipped another one in. I mean, there's also a wide open play where Radulov gets the puck behind the net, and Pavelski's just teed up for a one-timer on the other side. I mean, pretty much every way that it could go wrong on the PK, it went wrong on Friday night. Last night, you look at some of their power play opportunities, one of them was just an awful goal by Juuse Saros.
Yep.
It squirts right through him. That's a save that you got to have 100 times out of 100. You can't let that go through. And then other were just great backdoor plays. I mean, Pavelski with another shot down low. They moved the puck really well. It's a problem. I mean, and John Hines was asked about the penalty kill and the troubles that they had over the weekend and what you got to do to fix it moving forward as you come out and have Chicago coming in this week. Here's what John Hines had to say.
Well, I think it's 2 different years. Also, I wouldn't go back to 4. It's different coaches, different personnel. So I think if you look at this year, the other night we had problems with some tip plays, which I think we rectified in tonight's game. And then if you look at the games that happened, the goals that went in tonight, they were very different in the situation. One was off the rush that probably shouldn't go in. I think it was the second goal. You know, the third goal was a shot. It was 5 seconds left. Pavelski's down the goal line. I mean, if you look at it, we did a lot of good things on on the kill, and then I think Arvidsson had the same exact chance, 6-on-5 later in the game, and it didn't get in. So you know, we have to keep working on it. It wasn't good enough tonight, and we'll continue to work at it.
And remember, you're talking about a situation with the Stars where you don't have Tyler Seguin at all. Jamie Benn did not play yesterday because he got hurt in the first game. Victor Arvidsson kind of fell on his leg, and Benn was not able to go. So you're talking about two of their top weapons, maybe the two top weapons they have on the power play, not even being available for the Stars, and they're still running through you and scoring 8 goals. Joe Pavelski had 7 points in the first two games, 3 goals and 4 assists. I mean, you just can't let that happen.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, like the last one last night was tic-tac-toe perfection.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they did some good things. You got to give them credit sometimes for executing, but, yeah, you've got to. I mean, that's embarrassing. Radulov, does he still just have a thing for the Preds? Is you know, like going back to Arizona? Like he's he seems to really, really like.
He does.
I guess he seems to really, really like doing good things in general, but, man, that guy wears them out.
He's almost becoming like Jerome McGinley or Patrick Marleau, where every time those two teams play, he scores.
Yeah. He was great this weekend, and it's funny. Like every time he scores or does something, it's like he just won the Stanley Cup. It's one of my favorite things about him. It's also what I think makes Predators fans dislike him as much as they do. But, it's bad. And then you flip it around on the other side. You have plenty of power play opportunities if you're the Predators on Friday night, and you can't cash in. And that's, you know, all these – I've heard all these, you know, analytics and stats get tossed out there about the power play and how you're getting your chances, and you just got to stick with it. I'm so tired of that. Like, that's been the story for the last couple of years about the analytics and how you're looking on the power play. You got to bear down and finish on some of these chances. I mean, Duchesne had a couple of good looks. Forsberg, he got one last night to fall for him and score on the power play. He had some good looks in the first game as well. You need your power play to become a weapon for you, and that's got to happen. With the struggles that we think they could have this year offensively, and we've talked about – you know, the lack of depth in the top six, the questions you have there from an offensive standpoint, that power play, especially that top unit, it's got to be a weapon for you. I mean, you've got Johansson, Arvidsson, Forsberg, Duchesne, and Josi on a unit. That's pretty good. And you start looking around the rest of the league in terms of pure talent, that's up there in terms of talent on one power play unit. That's got to be a better weapon than it's been so far.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought Arvidsson was overall really good last night. I mean, that was a great chance late. Granlund gets one on an Arvidsson shot, but they've got to be better. By the way, we talked last week a lot about Roman Josi, right? But okay, now you can take him off the PK, and I noticed that last night only Ellis had more PK time than Josi. Yeah. So, well, never mind. Put your best player on everything.
Well, it was interesting because we've talked so much about, you know, Borowiecki and Benning coming in and how well they've played. They were bad on Friday night. And it wasn't just on the penalty kill, 5-on-5. It did not go well to the point where Benning wasn't in the lineup last night. Lucas Spezza made his debut for the Predators. So still some work to be done on that front. I still feel a lot better about the third pairing than I have in the last couple of years. But a rough weekend for that pair and a rough weekend for the penalty kill. Now, look. This is it's interesting because I think people are automatically just going to assume that the penalty kill is awful now. I thought the first three games the penalty kill was actually pretty good. Like they were playing well. And sometimes things happen. You run into a hot team. So I'm interested to see how they respond this week. But I don't know how, if you're a Predators fan right now, you couldn't be very concerned about special teams on both aspects, power play and penalty kill, based on what we saw this weekend.
So is this PKA going to be like the Titans' third down defense?
Maybe. Yeah.
It better not.
Maybe.
That's what I thought of.
Yeah.
Just like when the Titans' third down defense got just week after week after week this year, I thought of the Preds' power play of 2 years ago. But to your point, you got guys who can score on that power play. This is a coaching thing. I mean, you've got to figure out how to get that out of them.
Is it, though? Because we've been going through this issue with this group for 3 years now at this point, not being able to put it in on the power play.
Well, obviously, it's just like we were talking about earlier with, you know, what really matters, the horse to water. I mean, the players have to make plays. But, I mean, How many coaches got their hands on this power play a couple of years ago? Like, everybody in the building got a shot at it. Why? Because, like, there's something to be figured out here.
Sure.
You can't tell me there isn't.
Look, at this – and I had a couple of people tweet me this last night. At this point, while you're trying to figure things out on the power play, I don't know if my strategy wouldn't be, hey, Phillip, why don't you just keep rotating in a circle and we'll keep feeding pucks to you and you just shoot. That's, I mean – let's be honest. At one point, that's what they did with Shea Weber. You just line up over there. We're going to keep feeding you, and you just keep firing away, and eventually one of them will go in. Like right now, that's the most dangerous play they have on the power play. It's just kind of dueling around with the puck and waiting for Forsberg to get open in the right circle and shooting. That's how they scored last night. I mean, right now, that may be your best strategy. It's amazing to me that this top unit is not more productive. And this is not a this-year thing. This has been the case for the last couple of years. They've got to find a way to get that unit rolling on the power play. If you don't, it's just going to be really hard to stay in there and compete in this division. You've got to have a power play that's a weapon for you, and it's been a long time since they've had that.
What are they right now on the power play? You got that off the top of your head?
I do not have it off the top of my head. I think they've got 3 power play goals total, maybe 2.
Yeah.
I think Arvidsson had 1 against Carolina, Forsberg last night.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to – I mean, it's just incredible, the disparity right now between those two. And the thing is, I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, have they had a bad, like a terrible penalty kill?
Last year wasn't great.
It wasn't great. And, you know, again, like you said, we're still talking here a handful of games. So maybe this was just this bizarre weekend in Dallas and they'll figure it out. But they haven't been bad. Like, bad.
Right.
In this era.
Right. And that's, you know, you think with this team and all the different players that you've got with experience on the penalty kill, that's the thing to me. I mean, Borowiecki, Benning, lots of experience on the penalty kill. Guys like Colton Sissons and even Forsberg and some of these guys, Johansson, Arvidsson, they've got a lot of time on the penalty kill. So that's going to be the number one job this week for the Nashville Predators. You've got to figure out a way to get special teams fixed. You've got Chicago coming in here, and Chicago's not very good. Now, I don't know if they're the worst team on the earth, like Ryan Porth made them out to be. They just hammered the Red Wings.
Well,
Red Wings are pretty bad.
Both are pretty bad. I will say this. Chicago's power play has been pretty darn good this year. So,
if Patrick Kane guy may have a future.
Exactly. If there's one area where the Hawks can't expose the Preds, it is that one. And with Patrick Kane and some of the other talent that they have on there, on that power play, then, you know, they better get that penalty kill in order.
And speaking of that game, we're going to have a pair of tickets to give away in the 8 o'clock hour for the Preds taking on the Chicago Blackhawks tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. So make sure you're listening in for the cue to call coming up in the 8 o'clock hour for your chance to win those Nashville Predators tickets. When we come back, what are the Titans going to do on the offensive coordinator front? Some interviews taking place over the weekend. Maybe they've found their man. We'll discuss it when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us to begin the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get into the latest with the NFL playoffs and the Tennessee Titans with him. So looking forward to that conversation coming up here in just a few minutes. And Joe, speaking of the Tennessee Titans, obviously a search underway now to replace Arthur Smith at the offensive coordinator position, and some news coming out over the weekend that Chargers offensive coordinator quarterbacks coach Pep Hamilton in the mix there for the Titans. We've talked about Pep Hamilton maybe being a fit here at the offensive coordinator position, and now interviewed with the Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers as well, who also have an offensive coordinator position. If that's the route they end up going and Pep Hamilton ends up here in Nashville with the Titans, what would you think of that hire? What do you think of Pep Hamilton maybe as the next OC?
Someone's been saying that name for a while on this show. Yes. Have they not?
They have.
Have they not, Robbie?
His name is Joe Rex Road.
There you go. So which means he won't get the job. Yeah, I like it. I mean, you know, you're talking about a guy who Andrew Luck has said many times, gave a lot of credit to Pep Hamilton for what he did. Now, of course, he was with them at Stanford and at Indy. And then, you know, you look at last year with Justin Herbert. Not bad. not bad rookie season for him.
Yeah.
In between, he's been all over the place. I mean, he was with the Browns for a year. He was with Harbaugh for a couple of years. Then he went to the, you know, to the DC Defenders as head coach and GM for the XFL. So, I mean, he has tried some different things, but great 2020. Is obviously that staff gets fired. Anthony Lynn, by the way, I think he's going to be the Lions OC. But Hamilton helped himself a lot last year, and I think it makes sense to look at a guy who has had that kind of success with quarterbacks. It's a different situation. It's not like Tannehill needs to be
groomed.
Yeah. You know, but still, I mean, if you got a guy who's good at working with quarterbacks, you like that.
Yeah, and Pep Hamilton, obviously an impressive track record in that area. Also, Albert Breer over the weekend pointing out that the Texans offensive coordinator Tim Kelly was requested by both the Lions and the Titans, and Houston blocked Kelly on both. So interesting kind of nugget there. Titans also interested in interviewing Tim Kelly, and the Houston Texans said, nope, no thanks, not going to let you do that.
Are the Titans taking advice from this show? Because we've been talking about Tim Kelly,
maybe
too.
So.
Of course, these are very obvious things to look at. But, hey, let's take some credit for it. Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, look, it's a I'd like to hear more names around D.C. I mean, who have we heard on the D.C. interview front? Terrell Austin?
Yeah.
Is that it? I'd like to.
I haven't heard Matt Patricia. Looks like he's going back to New England.
Matt Patricia's going back to the Death Star. So it's probably,
a good move.
Better for everybody. But I like the variety, the casting the wide net out there, not just saying you're going to go internal. Maybe they still will. I mean, Vrabel may still end up going internal, but it looks like they're really out there trying to find people. And it's been reported that Tony Elliott.
Yeah.
So Tony Elliott could be the Titans OC, could be the Vols head coach. Who knows? Tony Elliott could be all kinds of things by the end of the week. But I mean, obviously, he's not coming to the NFL right now. But they're out there looking, and I think just being open to different ideas is good.
I think it is, too. And, look, regardless of who the next offensive coordinator is, there's going to be a pretty high standard in place based on this offense and the way it operated this year. And, look, quite frankly, there are nice pieces in place for you to come in and immediately be successful. I just wonder how attractive the job is from this standpoint. You look at the last two OCs that have been there. Matt LaFleur, now head coach of the Green Bay Packers. Arthur Smith, head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. If I'm a potential OC candidate at this Titans job, it's very attractive to me right now based on if you're looking at your head coaching future and that's the next step you want to take in your career, this offense, based on the personnel it's got and the recent history, I think you feel pretty good about your chances to come in and do that. Vrabel's got his little coaching tree developing right now at the offensive coordinator position.
He does. Now, of course, LaFleur, I don't know that LaFleur got that job based on
probably not
the work he did in 2018 or more the fact that, you know, he's buddies with who he's buddies with. But regardless, he got the job. And Arthur Smith, certainly. Talk about a quick ascent. Arthur Smith, so he's got Dean Pease, obviously, which, of course, Titans fans are going to have a little misty eyes as they look to Atlanta and see Dean Pease coordinate that defense. He's bringing in some other former Titans coaches, I believe, right?
Yeah.
He's loading up. He's loading up with some Titans castoffs. So, but, you know, I think for Vrabel, I'm really interested on the DC thing. Is he out there looking for somebody, or is he just going to circle it back here? I want to hear more movement on that.
If that's the route they go and they end up coming back with the same cast of characters next year and it's Shane Bowen in some form or fashion, whether he's given a title or not given a title, and Mike Vrabel still has his hands all over this defense based on what happened last year, both from a personnel standpoint and I think from a scheme standpoint as well, what does that tell you about Mike Vrabel? How concerning would that be if you're a Titans fan? That given how bad this defense went, he still didn't go outside and try to bring somebody else in.
Well, it tells you that Vrabel blames the players or the personnel and not the coaching for what happened this year. You know, how could you conclude anything else? And you know what? Hey, they come out next year and have a solid defense with different players, then he can be proved right. But I think fans would be very upset. If they come back with this, at least give Shane Bowen the D coordinator title. So everybody can scream at him to be fired, you know. I mean, yeah. It's only right. You know, if you're a coordinator in this league, you should be, you know, you should have the title and have all the crap that comes with it.
What I am interested in is how does John Robinson feel about all this? Because, look, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It was an awful offseason for him last year. It'd be hard-pressed for me to believe he has one that's even close to that this year. It'd be hard to do. You stack up a couple of those in a row, you're just probably not looking bright here for the Tennessee Titans. But I wonder how he feels about the defensive coordinator position, because from an outside looking in, it seems like he and Vrabel have pretty much been in lockstep with the decisions that they've made, and they've been on the same page. I wonder what Robinson's thoughts are of, hey, man, why don't you go out and hire a DC? Bring somebody in to help this defense, because what you trotted out there last year, even though I know the personnel decisions I made didn't work, you didn't help it by not hiring a DC. I wonder how he feels about all this and what those conversations are like right now between those two, who, like I said, I think have been largely on the same page right from the beginning.
Yeah, well, and I mean, if anybody wants to, like, totally blame Robinson on the personnel, I look at the two glaring bad signings. I look at Beasley, like Vrabel. Oh, I can coach that up. I can get hit. I can get it out of him. And also Clowney. I mean, do you think that was done without Vrabel's approval?
Or, oh, no.
Of course not. You know, he coached him in Houston. He coached his best season in Houston. So I agree. I think they're on the same page. And that's a great question. You know, is Vrabel like, look, when it comes to the coaching staff, is Robinson like, when it comes to coaching staff, Vrabel, you do your
thing,
you know? Or is it more like, hey, Mike, can we talk here, buddy?
Maybe, because that was a thing all season long with Titans fans of, why did John Robinson not go out and get a defensive coordinator? And that's Vrabel's call. If Vrabel wanted a defensive coordinator, Vrabel could have gotten the defensive coordinator. It's not on Robinson.
Yeah, but I do think they are. I mean, I'd love to have a breakdown around the league on the coach GM, because there are places where it's a lot more, like, separate. Like,
sure.
Okay, you deal with your stuff over here. Here's the players I'm giving you. I really do think that those guys are on the same page, and overall that's been good. But obviously, last offseason, just about every move was bad. So, how much does Robinson think, you know, like, the coaching staff defensively needs a shakeup?
That's going to be an interesting question to think about this offseason, and maybe a resolution this week as well on the offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. Lots of things potentially coming up in the world of coaching searches this week with Tennessee Athletics. When we come back, we'll dive back into the NFL playoffs. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. We'll get his thoughts on the Super Bowl matchup and also where the Titans go from here with both of their open coordinator positions. All that coming up. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.